Hey, welcome back to Novum. I know that we've taken a little bit of a break for the holidays, but I am back in Dundee and I have two new episodes lined up, ready to post over the next 2 weeks. And after that, I have some pretty exciting things planned, so just stay tuned. For today, I just have a small episode for you, just a short one to get us started. Something also to celebrate the new year, to reflect back on 2016 and think about the best books that I read this year. Today, this is my favorite science fiction of 2016, and you're listening to Novum.
I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can.
My favorite science fiction books off my bookshelf, and I laid them before me. There are 5 books, all in paperback. They all have that yellowish tinge to the pages that makes it smell like vanilla. Oh, it's intoxicating. So I pulled these books down because I believe I've read all of them in the past year, except for one of them, which is definitely do a reread. But I pulled these off because in the last year, they've made a real impact on me. And it's nice to look back on the year and pull down a few of the favorite books you've read and remind yourself of them. Maybe they're ones that you need to read again, even though it's just been a year. You never know when you're going to find that one book that really impacts you. So I decided to pull down some, and I guess I'll just use this as a jumping off point for talking about a few books that made an impact on me, and perhaps they might make an impact on you too, if you should decide to check it out based on my description. So 2016 was a year that I really got into science fiction. I started asking myself why I liked the genre, why I was gravitating towards it so much. I was suddenly interested in discussing the themes in science fiction. I found myself witnessing changes around me, and I started getting interested in the way I could reference science fiction works and connect them to reality. But in this last year, I found myself reading almost exclusively science fiction. And I would say that the first author I got really, really obsessed with when I started my expedition into science fiction was Arthur C. Clarke. I've talked about him in a previous episode, the Presence of God episode, which I think was a good introduction to him if you haven't heard of him. I mentioned him in that episode because he did not shy away from religious themes or theology. I mean, his vision of a future, and that there might be a godlike presence in the universe, but it might connect very closely with the theme of aliens, that there might be aliens that match with our perception of God. Clarke was obsessed with first contact stories that brought the human race into contact with an extraordinarily superior alien race. And this really features in almost all of Clarke's works, but especially in the two that I'll be discussing today. And the first of which is Childhood's End from 1953. This sort of shows why the 50s quickly became my favorite decade of science fiction. And it's always a decade I'm interested in reading more from. I chose this book when I was searching for my next book to read, and I didn't really have a preference for science fiction at that point. So I was taking books down from my shelf, and I decided I was going to open books to the first page at random And the one that could capture me with the first sentence, I would read. It's a fun way to get yourself reading, actually. If you really don't know what book to choose, I think it's such an amazing skill when an author ropes you in at the first line. And I know people say Robert Heinlein was great at that. But I was extremely taken by the first line of this book, so this was the first one that I read. The volcano that had reared Tarantua up from the Pacific depths had been sleeping now for 500,000 years. Yet in a little while, thought Reinhold, the island would be bathed with fires fiercer than any that had attended its birth. What a powerful set of lines. It sets the stage for this book that is so massive in scope and so gigantic in a way. Childhood's End opens with humans about to launch their first starship. Yet right on the brink of this accomplishment, Reinhold comments that the human race is no longer alone, because at that moment, spacecrafts appear in the sky. The rest of the book is about a benevolent takeover of Earth, but of course, it's up to your interpretation. This book has perhaps the greatest alien reveal I've ever read. It's a classic, so you might have encountered it before, but if you haven't, I would recommend reading the book and maybe saving the sci-fi series for another time. Clark is such a master of the buildup and the reveal, or sometimes just the buildup, which brings us to another Clark book I read this year, Rendezvous with Rama. So to me, if you've read Solaris, which is another book I actually read this, I went a little crazy on the science fiction this year. If you've read Solaris, these two books have a very similar appeal. So if you like one, you like the other, in my opinion. Oh, this copy is just gorgeous. I don't know what year this is, but this copy has sort of a fold-out page that shows Rama. So this definitely was not the copy I read from, because I struggled to visualize this the whole time. So having this might have been extremely useful, but God, it is absolutely gorgeous. Maybe I'll put a photo of this up on my Facebook page. Oh, it's just so amazing. Okay, I'll read you the... Let me see when this was published. Hold on. 1973. Okay, actually, this might be a first edition of this book. Yeah, I guess that's not crazy. I wouldn't say this one has as striking of an opening, but it definitely gets you straight to the action. After an asteroid nearly impacts Earth, humanity develops Project Space Guard. So Operation Space Guard picks up an object that is seemingly coming towards Earth or the sun. After further inspection, it doesn't seem to be a natural object. It's somehow cylindrical and smooth. It seems like a manufactured object, and it's enormous. So a group of scientists and explorers are sent out to rendezvous with what they call Rama, the spacecraft. But when they get inside, they find something that they could have never imagined. Rama is a self-contained world, complete with cities and a cylindrical lake that wraps around its exterior. Inside, there are a number of buildings, yet it all seems quiet. In fact, there doesn't seem to be any life at all on Rama. The book is an exploration novel complete with drama and intrigue. And Clark keeps you waiting to meet whoever built Rama. And I won't tell you how long. Just don't expect an easy answer. Okay, let's move on from Clark. Another book I read this year, and I'd read parts of this book before, but I hadn't gone through it, and that was that is Robert Silverberg's Dying Inside. This would be a very good book for somebody who perhaps doesn't profess an interest in science fiction. This would appeal to just readers of literature. Silverberg has a very literary style. This smells good. When was this published? This was probably in the 70s. Yeah, so this was written in 1972. I have a bit of a later edition. But written in a very literary style, a very classic style. And it's a very questionably science fiction. Its plot centers around a telepathic man who was born telepathic in that he can read thoughts. Yet he seems to be the only one. But the book is called Dying Inside because it opens with David losing his powers. He feels his abilities begin to die. I have read short stories by him, but I've yet to become very well read, but I'm certainly looking forward to that. So telepathy is definitely not purely a science fictional concept. It's how you deal with it. Let's say in Twilight, you know, the vampires were telepathic, and that's quite common for any sort of non-human creature or alien to be telepathic. And of course, it's not explained by science why David was born telepathic. I would say it's science fiction purely because it deals with the question of access and the repercussions of a more advanced being in a way, or just a different being, an alien being, amongst a race with different abilities. It's a fascinating portrayal that's very subtle. And this is a theme that will keep on coming up, I think, throughout this episode. From Clark and his humans who continually encounter more advanced beings and are challenged by that and changed by it. To the next book I'll discuss right after this, which is Flowers for Algernon by Daniel Keyes. In Silverberg's work, not a lot occurs in the plot, but just the reveal and the narrative style combine to make a fascinatingly disturbing and intriguing book. A very enjoyable read, probably not hard science fiction, but definitely enjoyable speculation. Okay, so I can't remember if I read this book this year or last year, but it was definitely on the brink somewhere. This is A Flowers for Algernon by Daniel Keyes. If you went to an American public school or high school, you might have read the short version of this called Charlie or Flowers for Algernon. It's a very short novel. Honestly, I would recommend this so much. Again, like the Silverberg book, you don't have to be a fan of science fiction to read this. I would say that most people who read this story don't think of it as science fiction, but it is absolutely a classic of the genre. If you're not familiar with this story, it is narrated by Charlie, a man with an incredibly low IQ. He is unable to understand the people around him. This is reflected in the spelling and the grammar. It's narrated through a set of journals that Charlie writes during his experiment. Charlie is going through a trial that will attempt to increase his IQ and intelligence. He goes through a procedure and they monitor him afterwards. And what happens is that the experiment works and Charlie becomes more and more aware of his environment. His intelligence begins to blossom in a very short amount of time. It is sort of like an uplift of the human. And we can see this in other works, this sort of sudden uplift of intelligence in books like Paul Anderson's Brainwave. But a lot of times this idea of suddenly enhanced intelligence is explored outside of or on the brink of science fiction. I'm thinking of the movie Limitless or Lucy. It's a very popular genre where somebody of perhaps average intelligence is increased to almost superhuman levels. And I think of that almost like an extension of the superhero genre, but I understand that is a debatable topic. However, Flowers for Algernon takes somebody of far below average intelligence, and it uses technology to augment. I think this is an incredibly important distinction because it raises all sorts of the moral questions and ethical questions that we're starting to encounter in our modern world, when we will eventually, if we don't already, have these decisions to make. Charlie in Daniel Keith's Flowers for Algernon, he's a microcosm for our need to change nature. Charlie, as a mentally disabled individual, yearns to be smarter, to fit in with those around him. Technology, in this case, offers to do that for him. The novel raises a classic question of SF. If we can, why shouldn't we? In the larger picture, the novel touches on genetic manipulation, on the man as God conundrum. It's a powerful tale of the benevolence and cruelty that interact in all fair tales of uplift. We see this in Childhood's End, and we see it here, on a smaller scale, that makes it more palatable and much more intimate. And in this way, Keyes is able to get at questions about uplifting that Clark wasn't. Is there something wrong with showing somebody a glimpse of a higher potential, a higher world, if they can't fully achieve it? This is something H.G. Wells also asks in The Island of Dr. Moreau. And Charlie does become much more intelligent and a higher IQ in a very short amount of time than most of his peers, including the researchers. And the narration begins to change the spelling, the grammar, the register. But the tragedy of the story is that the experiment proves temporary, and Charlie begins to degenerate. He begins to fall back to where he started. And the tragedy of this cyborg experience is why many often recommend this as one of the classic science fiction novels. I believe this was republished in the SF Masterwork series. But it's just beautiful. I cried at the end of this book. It's a short one. You can read it in one sitting. Get the full experience. So that was one of the best books I read this year. Okay, and another book I read this year, and possibly my favorite book I read this year, is The Best of Cord Wainer Smith. And this is a collection of short stories edited by J.J. Pierce. This short story collection was possibly the most magnificent thing I have ever read. I never heard of Cordwain or Smith before, but my dad recommended it to me because I was so into Clark at that time. And I definitely see the connection. Cordwain or Smith has scope unlike almost any other author, perhaps with the exception of H.G. Wells or Olaf Stapleton. But his stories take place over this extended period of time to about 16,000 years in the future. One of Clark's books, probably The City and the Stars, where I think it's like a billion years in the future, but that's just crazy. That was too much for me. Cordwainer Smith was writing from the 50s till the end of the 60s, I believe. The first story that he published is called The Scanners Live in Vain. This early story has a theme that almost all of his stories deal with in some way, which is the idea of technology becoming obsolete and needing to be replaced or just a better technology created. Which sounds so familiar in science fiction, yet I don't know that science fiction authors like to do it more than once. You know, showing a wide scope of the future where a technology that you introduce in one story is becoming obsolete by the end of that story. And what it would mean if the technology that were being replaced were sentient. Furthermore, if they were human. Almost all of Cordwainer Smith's technologies in his earlier works portray humans and technology as being indistinguishable from each other. Probably the most dated thing about Cordwainer Smith is that, writing in the 50s, and unlike his contemporaries like Asimov, for instance, he didn't see the future of computers, let's say. He writes in this far future, but almost never does he believe that computers could become more capable than humans. So his stories all deal with technology increasing, but his technology is all concentrated in the human body, creating cyborgs rather than robots or computers. To illustrate this, here's Cordwainer himself. You've got to remember what your job is. You're going because you're cheap. You're going because a sailor takes a lot less weight than a machine. There is no all-purpose computer built that weighs as little as 150 pounds. You do. To give that quote a little context, his short stories, especially his early short stories, all focus around humankind attempting to find a way to travel through the stars. And because they found that, it's almost an impossible process to stay awake for. It's painful. It's absolutely excruciating. So over the course of thousands of years, humankind tries these different technologies. They try to change humans into sort of automatons in a way. I'm at first sort of devising a method to cut the brain from the sensory organs, and these sort of crippled humans would be able to make a voyage and carry sleeper cells across interstellar travel. Those are the scanners, and they're replaced by the aforementioned sailors, who basically volunteer themselves to age 40 years in what they would consider a month to slow down their bodily processes so they can control the ship over this 40-year journey while the other passengers sleep. But I just find that idea so poignant, and it just serves to show the humanity that Cordwainer Smith brought to his stories about technology. They're so based in impending obscurity, humans being continually faced by a superior power to themselves. It's a constant novel of first contact where there are practically no aliens. Humanity is meeting itself, the improved version of itself, again and again. And those shock, that culture shock of changes is all presented through the eyes of those who were sacrificed in the process. I would recommend Cordwainer Smith's short stories. He only wrote one novel, Norstrilia, and I believe that these were both republished under the SF Masterworks series, but somehow I don't see him being talked about all that much. I was so happy to be introduced to this author, because if I wasn't, who knows if I would have ever found him. There are so many more authors that I still need to read one book by them, and it feels overwhelming, and you never know when you're gonna hit on that author that just strikes you so powerfully. And to me, so far, that is Cordwainer Smith. That about does it for this episode. It's funny how they all have to do with uplift in a way, which is one of my favorite concepts in all of science fiction. It's really nice to look back on the books I read that changed my life, my whole way of thinking about the world around me. And it really makes me excited for the year to come, because I have no idea what 2017 is going to bring into my life, what new books I'm going to read and be changed by. But I hope that I will be able to share them with you through Novum, and I hope that you're able to share them with me too. In conclusion, I hope 2017 brings good things for us, both in our private science fiction lives and outside. I will see you next time on Novum. I hope you had a happy holidays and happy new year.